Blog Talk Radio.
You have dialed is not in service. If you feel you've received this message in error, please hang up and try.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Keep telling me don't hang around. It's been
a long time coming, but I know, please hang up and try your call again later. Message CA.
Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click, connect, and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're talking about the Aaron Dean trial and the fact the prosecution rested today. Well, after 3 days of testimony, we heard from Diane Carr, Carol Dortch, Aaron Dean's backup partner, October 12, 2019, the 9/11 / non-emergency operator. We heard from the crime scene photographer, major crime scenes detective, Ashley Carr, the sister of Tatiana Jefferson. We heard from the medical examiner, Dr. Richard Fries. And we heard from Jane Smith, the neighbor who called police at night asking for a welfare check for his neighbor, Yolanda Carr. And we also heard from one other person. That's the crime scene personnel. We heard from the guy who was explaining that he had gone in that day and they, under cross-examination, asked him if he had even logged in and he failed to log in. So there was a lot of hiccups today with them calling out people who did not exactly follow protocol. But with that said, I think the biggest event of the day was that the prosecution rested. What does that say about the direction of the trial? Tonight, I have chiming in with me Jeff Harper and Christopher Marino. Good evening, Jeff. Good evening, Chris. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing, Carrie?
I'm good.
Doing okay. I'll mute. I just pulled over. I'm traveling, but I'll mute so I don't have background noise. Okay?
Okay. Okay, that's great. So listen, y'all, first of all, both of those young men are Caucasian. And one thing I want to put out there tonight, this ain't a black and white issue. It's everybody's issue, because what we got to realize is Tatiana Jefferson was in her own home. She was a college graduate on her way to medical school, you know, never involved in any criminal activity, wasn't in commission of a crime at the time in which it happened, was in her own home playing video games with her nephew. That's it. She heard a prowler in her backyard because no one identified themselves as Fort Worth PD when they were at the front of the house, and neither did they identify themselves when they went to the back of the house. That's it. All Tatiana knew was someone or something was in her backyard. And she'd even told her nephew, according to Zion Carr, that she thought it was a raccoon. So does that show you how defenseless she was in terms of thinking that anything was going to happen that night? And my point to say that is, if it could happen to her, it can happen to any of us. And so I hate to feel like the city is being divided along racial lines, because that's not the direction we need to go. We need to actually realize that an injustice anywhere, as Dr. King said, is a threat to justice everywhere, regardless of color. And I will tell you all a story very quickly before I begin tonight. Someone told me this story years ago about a Jewish man who he was a rich Jewish man, and he had seen an injustice with a drug dealer, a black drug dealer. And someone said to the oldest Jewish man, "I'm glad they did that to him, aren't you?" Mm-hmm. And the Jewish man said, "No, I'm not, because you know what? If it happened to him, and they get all the drug dealers, and then they get all the black people, and then they get everybody else, eventually that same monster will show up at my door." And I think that's the way I feel about what happened to Tatiana Jefferson. Nobody is safe if we all decide that it's okay what happened to her. Because if you're doing absolutely nothing in your own home in the middle of the night, college graduate, on your way to med school, taking care of your mother and your nephew, and it can happen to you, it can happen to any of us. You see what I'm saying? And so that's where I'm at tonight. We got to be careful in thinking that this is something that just happens to black people. No, that means the Fort Worth PD are covered no matter who they do that to. Because Mr. Waller, who was a white man in an East Fort Worth neighborhood of Woodhaven, it happened to him in his garage years ago. And so we got to be real careful in how we see that. We want to look along the lines of right versus wrong, not black versus white or police versus the people. It's right versus wrong. Jeff, do you agree with that? Jeff, hear me?
Absolutely. Very well said, Carrie. And yes, I absolutely agree with that. And I, you know, when I'm driving up in Fort Worth, I predominantly live down in the Austin area now. But I come up to DFW and visit friends and work occasionally. And when I drive down the interstate and I pass by Allen Avenue, I can't help but think of this shooting. And also I can't help but think of the police officer that was killed by the drunk driver in close proximity. And what you just said sums it up very well. It's not a case of police versus the people. It's a case of right versus wrong, and it doesn't matter what the races are. So very well said, Carrie.
Thank you, Christopher. Your thoughts?
I really agree too, and like I said yesterday, it's about people becoming informed and having a conversation like we're having. You know, it doesn't have to be a formal thing on the radio or on. You know, I think social media, I'm just going to give it up. Social media has is good, and it isn't. But, you know, everybody, I mean, people consider this social media as some kind of virtual marching ground, and it's not the same thing. It doesn't have the same effect as getting out there and having a march, you know, like we saw during the civil rights movement in the 60s. And I mean, you gotta beat some feet, you know what I mean? And but the issue about division and the racial thing is, I am in no way a denier at all that there aren't things that we need to talk about, and that we, but what we were talking about yesterday, how it's used to divide us, the racial issue specifically in this case and what it does, a lot of times I just feel that the racial conversation is complex and it needs to be developed, and you gotta have intelligent people having that conversation. But what we have is people throwing out the dog whistles, you know, when things like this happen, is you get this oversimplified dog whistle, and people are like, oh, well, wait, what? Oh, black cop, white cop. Oh, they're trying to do this in kind of a real simple, simple math, you know, and it's a complex calculus to figure that out. But the simple thing to understand is that this militant mentality of policing, you know, we were talking about it yesterday, the militant mentality, the call of duty mentality, and what you want, if you really evaluate the facts and the data, it's just like what I had mentioned earlier on social media today. We're talking about the protocols for responding to obstruction of justice. Okay, instead of the black and white, before we get into just saying black and white, let's bring up the facts. You know, we have this thing about say stop six. What's the difference in if we got general orders and protocols for a code 56? Why can't Neil Oakes come up there? Why didn't the prosecution call Neil Oakes up and say what's the protocol for, you know, and then let him sit there and say what the protocol is, and then sit there and ask him, is that protocol the same, and is that general order the same at stop six as it is, like you said, in Tanglewood?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree. And you know what?
Yeah.
Something else we got to address too is, you know, this trial wants to kind of go in the direction of anti-pro police versus pro police. Let's go there. Yeah. Everybody who they classify as anti-police isn't somebody who hates police. A lot of times people who they call anti-police are just people who feel like police should be held accountable when they do something wrong. And everybody who's pro-police should not be somebody who feels like police can get away with anything just because they have a badge and a gun. Something's very wrong with that. I mean, I think we all should be right down the middle. All of us should want good police officers, and we should want police officers accountable when they do something wrong. And I think we need to redefine qualified immunity, because if you are out there just ramboing in the street and just shooting people because you have a badge and a gun, that's not right. And I think just that alone speaks volumes to the fact that we got a problem in the way that things are happening here. You know, and in Fort Worth, it just seems like police do not get held accountable when they do things wrong. And I think this trial is very much going along those lines, and it's getting very scary where people can't tell the line between right and wrong when the police are concerned. It's as though the police, regardless of what they do, some kind of way is, oops, I made a mistake, or oops, it was my training, or oops, you know, it's just anything. I mean, any pick a reason. And they seem to think it's okay if the police did it. And I think that's the scariest thing I'm seeing in this trial, and it's sending the wrong message, because we're the 12th largest city in the country. People are migrating here in large numbers, but in my opinion, if I was someone who was thinking about coming to Fort Worth and moving here, and I learned about the Tatiana Jefferson trial, and I followed it up until today, I would think this is not where I want to live. It's not going to be safe for me to be there, because if they're going to say that this guy shot her for absolutely no reason at all, and it's okay, then Fort Worth isn't so great after all. It's not Mayberry,
right,
like a lot of people, yeah, make it out to be. And I think that's what we're seeing in this trial. Would you agree with that?
I would. And another kind of idea that I would shoot out there is that, so here's for example, what you also get is you've seen this. We talked about this yesterday too on the show with the interviews, the qualifications, the resumes of these police officers. You got Darch. I mean, on the stand the other day. No, I mean, I'm not. It's not personal or everything like that. But she's kind of she's not real quick witted, you know. And maybe that's insulting. Aaron Dean, the same thing. There were red flags. They're putting all of these red flag officers in this community where it is critical. And you're sitting here, like we said, you're sitting here and saying they want to have this narrative. They want to have this calculus. They're evaluating this is a high crime area where we need professional, technically proficient police officers, and they're sending their derelicts on a daily basis. That's who they send in there. Now, here's the experiment that I think the city council should just force Neil Noakes to do. Let's just do this. Let's take Central Division, okay, and just swap out the whole crew with North Division and bring North Division into Central Division, and let's do that for 1 month because, you know, it's not a – it's like we said, it's not a problem with police. It's not – It's an organizational thing that's at the leadership level of this police. There were, like I said, accountability away from Aaron Dean. But the bottom of the line is if you watch his interview, which is posted on the internet, the dude was arrested for a sexual offense. It got downgraded to a simple assault, but he groped a female student at UTA, and it was like, I don't know, but you know, he got a pass on that. Well, he stood up in his interview and admitted to it. Straight up said, yeah, I did that. It was just whatever, you know. That's a disqualifying – that's called indecent assault, okay? Huh. And as a police interviewer, that's a disqualifying factor right there. You just don't get to be a cop. You don't get to be a teacher. You don't get – you got to go stay an engineer. He's an engineer. Stay making your money, man, but you can't cop.
I agree. I see Leon Reed has joined us. Good evening, Attorney Reed. How are you?
Good evening. I'm as well. I'm kind of in a state of disbelief, like much of I don't want to just say Black Fort Worth. I think a lot of people are just kind of wondering how, after 3 years, all the citizens of Fort Worth get as an effort is really less than 2.5 days of trial. And this, if you look at it, and I'm going to break this down a little bit later in another venue, and I hope you do a follow-up tomorrow because tomorrow I won't have that obligation. But
okay,
if you look at it, on Monday, trial went from 9 to basically noon because they let out around noon for the funeral of Jim Lane, and you have a 30-minute mid-morning break. So there was 2.5 hours of trial on Monday. On Tuesday, you had the same 2.5 hours in the morning. Okay, so that gets you to 5 hours. And then you go from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. That's 4 hours. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now you're up to 9 hours. Then you go to the same 2.5 hours this morning. That gets you to 11.5 hours. And then by, let's say, 3 p.m. today, after having an extended lunch, coming back at 1:30, let's give them till 3 p.m. That's 1.5 hours in the afternoon. That gets us to around 13 hours of total testimony after 3 years of having an opportunity to prepare. Okay. And are my numbers wrong?
No.
No, that sounds about right.
And you are absolutely right in your assessment that you and the gentleman, the caller, that this is a systemic problem within the Fort Worth Police Department and its leadership. This is something that I've been trying to push for years as a pattern that is indicated by their racial profiling reports, by their use of force reports, by the PRE reports that came out, both of them, the police reform expert reports, the interim report that came out July 31st of 2020, and then the final report that came out earlier this year in the fall in September, I think September the 9th or so of 2022, and both of those reports, basically they said the Fort Worth Police Department talks a good game when it comes to having policies and stuff in place, but no one follows them, and they are not enforced. And as a citizen sitting in the audience and hearing a police officer say on the witness stand, why did you choose the East Division? That's where all the action is.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's where the murders, the rapes, the stabbing, you name it, they got it.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that I believe I can make a difference there, that I want to go there and learn the citizens and represent that community and help keep everyone safe and serve them as best as. No, it was, that's where the action is. And so the caller's earlier statement in that same interview with former officer Aaron Dean, when they asked him why he wanted to be a police officer, he said, action and adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells you that they're coming to people of color neighborhoods for action and adventure. And it would have just been too boring to go and knock on the door and say, police, is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And you know what? I think I have the problem with, and I think he alluded to it, and I'm just going to say, they seem like they're picking low IQ people. I mean, even though Aaron Dean was college educated and an engineer, his discernment skills, his analytical skills, his ability to assess a situation and have some form of a gut instinct as to how to proceed did not exist. It just doesn't seem. I mean, him and Darch both. I just don't understand, like, how two people could have gone there that night and the doors were open and nobody opened the door and said police. I just don't get that part. Even if the bad guy was in there.
The last time, now look, I've been practicing criminal law for 18 years now in Tarrant County, and in my experience, I've yet to have a burglary suspect or a robber leave both the doors open. So you can see what they were doing in the house.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? In this instance, both the front door and the side door were open. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the imagery that was put forth is that, you know, this is a dangerous, high-crime area, and, you know, oh, it's unfortunate, you know, that this young black woman in her messy house got killed, but, you know, sucks to be you.
Mm-hmm.
But
because
you know what? There is no consequence. I really question if the house was really that messy. I'm just saying. Somebody said something to me today, and it really resonated with me. They said it looked like somebody took the garbage and just threw it all over the floor. And that's exactly what I think I saw.
Well, yeah, look, anytime you have an 8-year-old kid in the house, and that could have been their night, hey, we just playing around, whatever, it's, you know, we'll clean up tomorrow, you know. But that's where you do the follow-up questions to explain that kind of stuff. When you have people saying your neighborhood is crazy. Why not ask Mr. Smith, Mr. Smith, tell me about your neighborhood. You tell me, you know, because if you live in a neighborhood where your neighbors are concerned enough, hey, I tell you, we love each other in my neighborhood. We're prideful about our community. That's why I checked on my young neighbor across the street, because we care about each other. But they made it out to seem, without rebuttal, this is just some high-crime area where people are running wild, and whatever you want, they got it. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
And because that wasn't refuted, then that's the impression that the defense is being allowed to give. And I've told you on this show that Miles Brissett and Bob Gill weren't no chumps. You could see the difference in the preparation in the questions that Miles was asking.
Mm-hmm.
He knew more about the SOP than the cop did.
Yeah.
You understand? This is, you know, what 3 years and good, you know, and they came prepared for a heavyweight fight. And that's not what the citizens of the state of Texas got. Unfortunately, I know both of these prosecutors, and this by far, in this one man's opinion, is not their best effort at all. But unfortunately, tonight I have to go ahead.
Well, let me ask one question then. So, when you see a murder trial, you see a big picture of the victim. We don't see that in the trial. We did not ever see them humanize a Tatiana Jefferson.
You're right in that because it's justice for her too as the victim, and a jury and the community should get to know who is also seeking justice from the grave. And unfortunately, that was not communicated. Instead, we just have a young black woman in a messy house at that time, you know, who's dead. And hey, the police thought it, you know, they, you know, it just, yeah, they never made her who she was.
But today they tried to put drugs on. Did you catch that part?
No, I didn't. I had a hearing in the afternoon. Explain that really quickly, please.
I'll tell you really quickly. They said that she had a substance in her waistband, and according to Channel 8, the judge would not let them elaborate on that, but they wanted to make it an issue, like maybe she had drugs. And the whole thing with the interview with Zion today was more about him saying his aunt was endangering him by allowing the gun to be somewhere where he could have come in contact with it. He was just told not to touch it. So
no, the gun was in her purse and she was in the room. That was not refuted in any way, shape, form, or fashion. I'll have to go because I did have hearings this afternoon, but I was in court in the morning session. So I'll have to go back and look at that because I actually got a call while I was in my docket in the afternoon that the state had arrested. But if you have the opportunity tomorrow or when you do your next show, because there's no trial Thursday or Friday, so we're not going to be doing our nightly debrief at the other venue, but please get back in touch with me and I'll see if I'm available.
I'll do it. Thank you, Attorney Reed.
All right.
So, you know,
thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you. He just made it clear, y'all, this ain't the way it's supposed to go. I mean, so that says a lot right there. Christopher Dead, you know, prosecution is not impressing even other attorneys with the way they've handled things so far.
I said on the first day, it seemed like they got out of the gate to a good start. I think Ashley Diener, I don't know, but it's the same thing with the Fort Worth. In my opinion, what you're gonna run into if you really could be the fly on the wall on that second floor of the Tim Curry Criminal Court building where all of these strategies and all of these attorney assignments come up, and what it's the script. It was a red script, and go in there motivated on the first day, charged up on coffee, and then you take a few licks. Like I said, Mr. Reed was saying that, yeah, Dean's got Mike Tyson on his side, and I don't know if you guys remember there was a video game and they had this the weakest person on there was Glass Joe, and you know on the little Nintendo, and you could anyway they called him Glass Joe and he was fall down with one punch. But anyway, the thing that we're talking about with the messy house that Mr. Reed brought up, we talked about mm-hmm. yesterday. I said it straight up, okay? The truthfulness of that statement that Darch was saying, ransacked, this, that, whatever. We saw the pictures. The pictures that they showed weren't bothersome to me. The cabinets mm-hmm. open, this, that, whatever. Fine. But you know what? At the bottom line, you had two rookie cops. If it comes to a point where you got two rookie cops, I can tell you that that they should have backed away. If it's transitioning to a burglary in progress or whatever, you ain't gonna freaking go around playing Call of Duty with two cops and handle that. They're lying.
Right.
So I'm just sitting there saying.
And the thing is, you know, it's so much about, you know, when you just look at this, you don't even have to be a trial a lawyer or a paralegal or anything like that to see this does not resemble the trial. It just doesn't. It doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel like both sides are fighting hard. It seems like I see the defense just punching them. But when I look at the prosecution, I see them tapping, you know, the hit and miss. So it really doesn't seem like a fair fight so far. You agree with that?
They're punting.
Yeah. What? Like, yeah. Somebody's life is
away.
Almost out. Let's say that. Huh?
I said they're punching the ball.
Right. And you know what? And even in opening statements, and I think I said this on yesterday, in opening statements, it almost felt like the prosecution was helping Dean's case. It didn't seem like she made a long enough opening statement. It didn't seem like she hit enough important points. As we just talked about, where's the picture? Tarrant County DA's office, where is the big picture of a Tatiana Jefferson? Y'all got 2 days to go get it and put it up there Monday. But in my opinion, there absolutely needs to be an image up there so we can humanize a Tatiana Jefferson. We want to know who the victim was. So when you keep saying a Tatiana Jefferson, we want to know who you're talking about. We saw one picture of her in the courtroom today, and her sister had literally about 5 minutes to talk about her. And even when the prosecution opened with Ashley, I heard Judge Gallagher say, move on, in a very nasty mm-hmm. way, as though to say you're taking too much time talking about her. Did you catch that?
And why didn't we get that kind of action yesterday whenever Bob Gill was freaking battering on James Smith?
I mean,
at a certain point, I understand that Bob Gill, he needed to go down that avenue, but he just kept on wrangling, and he knew that it wasn't respectful at all.
No.
That he gave to.
There were so many things going on, y'all. Listen, I had already decided I was going to paragraph school. I was going to start taking some paralegal courses, and you know, I was on the fence because you know I've been out of school a really long time, but. Mm-hmm. The trial absolutely let me know that is the direction I needed to be going. And so I am mm-hmm. absolutely going to do that now because I absolutely see a need where people who look like me need representation. And, mm-hmm. and maybe I will go into it more. You know, go even further after I finish those courses. But I just really realized like we're in trouble. I mean, if this is who we got, you know, defending us, we don't stand a snowball chance in hell. So we got to start. And let me tell y'all a story real quick. And I know I'm good on stories, y'all. I'm always telling y'all a story. Years ago, and it's in my archives, I did a show with two Klansmen. One was a former Klansman and one was a current Klansman. And mm-hmm. and I don't even know why I had an interest in the show, but I did. And the the former Klansman, he was religious now, and he changed his ways, and he was really trying to convert other current Klansmen from doing what they were doing. But I asked the question of the current Klansman, and I said, but I don't understand why y'all burn crosses in people's yards. That was just one of the questions. And he said, we don't do that anymore. He said, we are now doctors, lawyers, police officers. Y'all see where I'm going with this? That's what he said. And the hair on the back of my neck stood up, because what he was saying is, we do it the legal way now. If we're going to kill you now, we kill you the legal way. And therefore, we don't have to go to jail. We don't stand trial. We don't do any of that, because we're going to get off. And so it's scary now. I mean, it's just scary to think about it. But that's what seems like is going on, Christopher.
Yeah. And the other bit, I'm done. I can't even get mad, because, like I said, I'm not in a position to solve the problem at this moment. But that thing with the, we were talking about Zion Carr. Why did they show that video today? It was there was no point to it. I mean, it was like not even like 2 minutes of video.
Explain to them what you told me that was about.
Yeah, it was just.
We're calling Jeff back. We lost him earlier. Go ahead, finish, Christopher.
So what I saw today. I didn't see the one yesterday, but I heard a lot. Everybody was all upset about that.
Hi.
I'll mute. I'm standing inside of the store, and hopefully the signal won't drop. Okay.
Mute yourself. Okay. And so finish, Christopher. Go ahead.
So I didn't really watch all that video, but I heard everybody saying that he was wearing. And I agree. I would be offended about they put him in a blue line shirt. This, that, whatever. Okay. But that's semantics. But now, today, what we had today, that was real. That right there, everything that confirmed everything that I sat there and said about the mentality of the cops as they responded to that crime scene, what they were doing, it was, I don't know what other word to choose. I mean, I could sit there and be funny about it, but it was, I just really confirmed in my mind that it was a cover-up, a downplay. What they were trying to do was gaslight a Tatiana and the whole scenario, and they were trying to create this narrative that was gonna give Dean leverage to get off, not get indicted, and everything like that. So what you had in that video today was that interviewer that they've been discussing. That why didn't they call her as a witness? I mean, typically you would, boom, And obviously,
remember, we were told how great she was and how she was known across the world for doing the work that she did, but some kind of way she's not testifying. Go figure, y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you close.
Yes,
but what they said in the video,
Let me say this real quick. Zion's testimony yesterday, you could hardly hear it. But today they amped up the video, the volume. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
They amped it up. They amped up the volume, so it was probably the same thing we heard today. But the thing that I saw in the video today was they were asking him, like you said, about this, and it was those questions weren't even to do with trying to find out what happened with somebody being shot to death. They were having to do with the person that was shot to death. Did she ever tell you to this gun? Where was this gun? And then she said, were there other guns in the house? And where were the other guns? That was a CPS. I've seen these things. That's how they interview kids whenever there's like a child in endangerment scene, and they want to freaking wrap up the parents for, and I mean, that's the impression that I got out of that whole interview, that she was there to assist, to find out whatever little information that she could find out the situation better for the police. And like, and the other thing was, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So,
I don't
and then the other thing was too, we didn't get her on the stand. We saw in that body cam video, and we heard James sitting there saying that there were 50 or more than 10 to 15 police cars there within 10 minutes. And we've heard the name Officer Hoffman. These are guys that are that are known for other things, and we've got a whole police department that's compromised, and I believe that that's why this case, that I believe that that's the whole reason why the prosecution has abbreviated their case, because if they put these guys on, it's going to be people are going to and it's going to create a, like I said, you said it, this is the Fort Worth Police Department on trial, and I don't take any accountability away from Aaron Dean, you know, under the law, but the judge and the prosecution designed this case. If they wouldn't have went about going by this script of the general orders, and which are and at the end of the day, the jury's going to be asked to determine to decide their case based on the Texas Penal Code, the elements of murder, okay? And you've got the whole jury sitting here thinking that the law is what the general orders say. And that, so the prosecution has really not, I mean, they didn't really create like a murder scenario. What we have here is a police administered disciplinary hearing under general orders. So, if he followed the orders, he's innocent. If he didn't follow the orders, he's guilty. But I don't know. It's just chaos.
It was chaos. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you what I saw. I saw an octopus today in the courtroom. And an octopus, if you notice, is a round thing in the middle. And then it has all these legs, these splendors off of it. And that's what we saw. It was all over the page. It was everything but Aaron Dean shot and killed Tatiana Jefferson. You know, it was all about the crime scene investigators failed to log in, or the photographer, you know, forgot to mention this or that, and pointing out the errors of everybody but Aaron Dean, telling us that Tatiana may have had a substance on her person. Hey, you had 3 years. What was the substance? Because it probably didn't exist, and it may have been put on her, or more than likely. Mm-hmm. So when you really think about how this is really playing out, they did an octopus on us today, or the last 3 days. Mm-hmm. First of all, did y'all hear what Attorney Reed said about how many hours we've actually been in court in the last 3 days? Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, totally about 13 hours. He said the first day on Monday, we spent 2.5 hours. On Tuesday, we spent 2.5 before the break, and then 4 hours after the break for a total of 6. And then today, Wednesday, we spent 2.5 hours after an extended lunch. So
we had a whole week of jury selection.
Right. Hello. And let me remind y'all this. It's already been put in the equation that the judge wants to go on vacation sometime this month. So are we rushing through the trial like a microwave trial? Is that what we're really trying to do? Do we really want to do that? We don't want a judge that's too busy to do this trial, so are we being fast-forwarded through this so that he can get to his vacation? I mean, this makes no sense to me whatsoever. I mean, it's like everything is being abbreviated, or everything is being accelerated. When the judge told the prosecution today, when she was talking to Ashley Carr, he said, move on. As though I don't want to hear no more about that. And he was talking about a Tatiana Jefferson. He told her to move on.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you tell the prosecution when she's talking to you about talking to a witness about the witness who happened to be the victim's sister, tell me about your sister, and then you move on? When do they do that?
I'm not about the sister or everything that's there, but the questions that the prosecutor were asking her, I understand the humanization fact. Let me tell you what I think, okay? You know, they had a lot of this off time today. They shut the cameras down for some reason for a long time, right? Yeah. What I saw whenever they were doing that, what I saw on one of the channels, one of the feed channels, live or something, the commentators – there's two prosecutors from Dallas County that are attorney from Dallas County, and they were saying, well, when I've seen these over here in Dallas County, when I see these these murder trials, the first thing that you do is you come out of the gate with the characterizing the victim. You know, you want to introduce the victim, okay,
wow.
the victim of the crime, and we didn't get any of that. What they pull up Zion, right?
Wow.
Anyway, so what I'm thinking and what and then so I saw at the very end the last thing they did before I and I don't even know how they rested because I watched the end of them. I watched them vacate. I watched them leave the court and say something about tomorrow, this, that, whatever. And then for some reason I saw some people saying the state rested. Then I looked it up online and I saw that it was true. So that seems to me like they kind of done that on the down low too, because they didn't want people gasping in the courtroom in front of the jury whenever the state rested on that pathetic ass abbreviated case that they made.
They did. They were muted. They were muted when they rested. And I'm going to say this before I go to 817-905. One thing, pay attention, y'all. They had Ashley Carr as the last witness. They only talked to her for about 5 minutes, maybe 10 total. Mm-hmm. And then they're resting for 2 days. Oh, no, actually 4 days, because we got Thursday and Friday, Saturday and Sunday. So what they want the jurors to do is forget what they just learned about the victim. You see how that's playing out?
Right.
We got Thursday and Friday for no reason at all. We're not going to have trial. And Saturday and Sunday. And when you come back Monday, do you really think that 10 minutes that Ashley talked got a chance to talk about a Tatiana and the one picture that we saw of a Tatiana, the jurors are going to remember her and humanize her? That's what we saw today, the games people play. Let's go to 817-905. Mm-hmm. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Footwork. 817-905.
Hey, I'm on.
Hey.
Hey. So hey. I just asked to join. So I had the opportunity on January 2019 to meet a Tatiana.
Mm-hmm.
And when I met her in Pleasant Grove.
Right.
I met her in a war zone. There were two actually the night I met her, there was bullets. There was people shooting, and I heard the shells and the bullets blow into the ground. And I looked at Tatiana. I said, and I'm scared. And she's like, I was like, you're not scared? She was like, girl, I'm used to this. Those were her exact words.
Mm-hmm. So she said, I'm used to
get murdered. Yes.
Okay. So for her to get murdered,
In Fort Worth like that, that was like a suburb to her. And then the way they said the house was, mm-hmm. I believe Fort Worth PD threw that trash in her home.
Mm-hmm.
Because when my home was broken into and I called Fort Worth PD, they did nothing about it. But guess what? My trash bags were dumped out all over my home.
Wow.
So the way they're trying to make it to say her out to be.
So who do you think put the trash in the fort?
I believe it was Fort Worth PD.
Wow.
They were tampering with the evidence. That's why they were so quick to get Zion out of there.
Wow.
Making it look like it was
How did the gun get by the door? They said the gun. I mean, it's funny how they spend a lot of time on stuff that really is not a big deal. But things like the gun sitting next to the door, the prosecution rested without telling us how the gun got on a box sitting next to the door. Like, the defense tried to put the gun in her hand and said she was at the window with it. So how if she was at the window with it, did it get by the front door? Y'all better pay attention.
Right. And that's kind of crazy that they're resting today. Guess what? Mm-hmm. Tomorrow I have to go downtown for the court for my son.
Wow.
Was there other court hearings that scheduled for it? Was there ever other court hearings that were scheduled today for during the last week why Dean was on trial?
Yeah, they've been pretty busy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think so. No, this is just this trial. I don't think there's a holiday. They're just telling you we're not going to have trial for this case for 2 days, and we'll see you Monday. You know,
so now,
I guess,
when do they do that, though?
That part.
They never do that. Don't they do trial straight through?
Well,
Yeah,
it's highly
unusual for such a high priority case. I mean, I'm not comparing them or anything like that, but what? How long did the O.J. Simpson trial last? Like what? A month and a half?
Wow!
Come on.
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh no, Karen, go ahead.
It's too much going on. It's mm-hmm. too okay. First of all, this is the most insane thing I've seen. Aaron Dean to have the audacity to say he can't even get a fair trial in Fort Worth. That has almost become the joke of the day, because this man has been afforded every special white privilege treatment that anybody's ever gotten. I've seen in a courtroom in my life. You know, so, and since the trial has begun, it's only continued. And so if anybody mentions change of venue again, then you know the fix is in. Because I don't know if it gets any better than this for him, literally it must gonna be his mom and his daddy sitting on the jury. I mean, because literally everything we've seen is got this thing swaying for Aaron Dean. You know, no mm-hmm. blacks on the jury, you know, 13 hours out of three whole days, you know, those should have been 8-hour days each day. So literally we would have had 24 hours and we're talking about 13.
Mm-hmm.
Extended break. They even said today, you know, we took a long break just because they said the cameraman focused on the prosecution computer. That should have been a 10-minute reprimand. What were we doing?
And you couldn't see anything. I saw that happen, and I thought the same thing, but it was, oh, man.
It wasn't what they made it out to
be. I didn't watch the trial today because, you know, I'm still fighting for Jalen Rice. So did they talk about the documents that he requested upon his punishment phase?
No, what document?
The document that he's requesting – all numbers to witnesses.
That was more. Mm-mm. The documents are.
I'm reading them verbatim, so I don't mess it up here.
Okay.
They listen to names and phone numbers to all witnesses that testify. The jury, he wants their information. Sounds like when is the victim not protected? Or the people that testified, they're not protected?
Okay, hold up. You're taking me way too fast. Okay, so you're saying, he's saying if he gets found guilty in the penalty phase, he wants to know what again?
He wants to know the names, the phone numbers, addresses of all the people who testified.
Yes.
Anybody who testified against him, what are they supposed to be testifying about that he's so concerned about? What are they going to be testifying about in terms of his sentencing phase?
They're supposed to be testifying against the misconduct.
The character, the prior misconduct, stuff like that.
Prior misconduct, yeah. I'm trying to read the word from work. I'm trying to get a word from work.
Well, yeah. Find that word for work.
And how they operate like a gang. So basically, if he sits in prison, when he is sent to prison, his
you got
colleagues can go out and take the witnesses out.
Oh my God! That sounds like a joke.
That's where he belongs.
Amber Geiger case. Are you serious?
Yeah, that would explain why that young man is no longer living today.
So they're going. Let me understand. So if he's found guilty, they're going to turn over to him the information on everybody who testifies against them: their telephone number, their addresses, and what? Their names. Their names and addresses.
Their names. Oh, wow.
Anybody comes up dead on the list, y'all. I'm just saying.
It's a black and white.
That's crazy.
But that is the I mean, that would explain why the Amber Geiger, why the one witness that testified against, that testified, and he did not want to come back to Dallas-Fort Worth to even, because he was scared for his life. That would explain why he's not.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and we heard, this is the other part of it, too. This is the other part of it, too. And, I mean, it might come into play later. I don't know. My expectations have been lowered. But we did hear, I remember hearing that there were previous incidences where some of his performance reviews. He had a review that they said that his supervisors had reprimanded and retrained him for having tunnel vision and having problems with interacting with people and stuff like that. None of that.
Well,
I'm sorry,
I don't mean to interrupt you. I should have the document right in front of me. I can read exactly what it says.
Well, please do. What does it say?
Okay. The defendant requested a notice of crimes, wrongs, or other acts. So what he's requesting... Name of the victim. Date of the alleged.
Not the victim. It doesn't say victim, doesn't it? Name of the who?
It did say the witness.
It said victim? Okay, witness. Okay. We're listening.
Give me one second. I want to make sure I get it all right.
Okay. But it said name of the witness, not the victim. The name of the witness.
Name of the witness. I'm sorry. It's name of the witness. I'm sorry. It does say that. Name of each and every expert witness. The address and telephone numbers of each and every expert witness.
That's just a blanket.
Prior judgments of conviction. Yeah, so he want that's information that he should not be denied. Because the defendants like Zion, her sister, they're all protected. Where
that's
is the victim's advocate in all this?
That's just wrong. I wish you sent me that document.
Let me make sure I heard this right. This is a statement that Aaron Dean made?
It says defendant, yes. It is a discovery that he requested.
Yeah, the discovery. His attorneys file what they do is they file a motion pre-trial for the witness contact information so that those witnesses, and they can force, because there's the rule under the Michael Morton Act that if, you know, the Brady disclosures, if you've ever heard of Brady v. Maryland, if a cop has a prior bad act if they've committed any kind of moral turpitude, particularly felony offenses, but if they've been accused of, if a cop has filed a false report or any kind of stuff like that, and it's not only cops, it's all state's witnesses, the state has a burden, anything that they have that is requested or that they have known, that they can known by like state records. So if they can do a criminal background check, they have to do a criminal background check on all their witnesses. And if there's any convictions, then they have to provide information about that to the defense so that they can impeach that witness on the stand in case he's lying against them. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, are you serious?
Aaron Dean. Yeah, that's what the whole Michael Morton 39, you'll hear him.
Okay. And I'll see it right court, here. I got the second code. Yeah. Okay. He's getting a real fair trial.
Dean's not getting that information. Theoretically, Dean doesn't get any of that information. That's to his attorneys, just so that they can conduct a survey and so they can impeach the credibility of the witnesses to it. You know, to knock them down.
But
they should have done with Carol Darch. But Carol
Darch was a plant. I'm looking at that document now, and number 7 says the name, address, and telephone number of any witness that the state intends to call to testify about the defendant's propensity for violence. The defendant is affiliated with a criminal street gang, or that he poses a continuing threat to society.
Yeah.
Is he a part of a street gang? Why would that be there?
What they don't want is somebody that he beat up or done something to before. They want to get they don't want the state calling some of his arrestee that he framed or did something wrong to. So they want to be able to freaking come up when they'll know that he's coming. You know, like if he pulls somebody over and did something wrong and then they dismiss the charge or whatever, what they want is the state to do their duty and give them all the negative information about that witness. It might not get admitted into court. They might not be able to admit that stuff to court, but they do have to disclose the information to the defense team about any witnesses that they have to call.
But that's scary.
But it doesn't go to Aaron Dean.
I mean, that's,
you have to read up on the Michael Myers,
because he has people that know people that can get this information. So
that
right there is very scary.
Yeah.
Why would that?
Scary.
I mean, why would you want? It sounds like you could be witness tampering too, though, messing with the witnesses.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Y'all
need to pay attention. I don't know.
So what they trying to do? Bully the witnesses. They gonna try to bully the witnesses.
That's what it seems
like. They gonna be trying to harass the witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm confused about this because the witness list had Zion Carr, Julian Bowman, James Smith, Yolanda Carr, who's now deceased, Cyrus Brown, Noliella Jefferson, Ashley Carr, Amber Carr, Adarius Carr, Lapaka Jefferson, who's the brother of Marquise Jackson, Jefferson, who's now deceased, Madeline Durlin, Valerie Durlin, Barbara Durlin, Hernandez. And it says KS, formerly known as ET, she provided report in TSP for full name.
Mm-hmm.
So where are those people at?
And have you noticed that the mayor is all over these documents?
The mayor, yeah. The mayor is supposed to be testifying. Where are those people at? Or are those people going to be called by the prosecution?
Oh, dang.
Are those people going to be called by the prosecution?
Yeah, well, my whole thing was that I was thinking that the defense was going to have to aim. The defense was really going to have to aim for a mistrial, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, I just that was their goal. But
mm-hmm.
after seeing what the state had to present, I'm mm-hmm. not pessimistic. I'm hopeful and faithful, but it was a failure to launch. And
yeah,
I mean. Because, like I said, they did. I told you that the elements of murder, they put the facts out there, but they didn't frame it for the jury in terms of what the questions are going to be asked of the jury whenever they get their jury instructions. They didn't frame it in the context of murder. So they framed the whole argument for the last 3 days has been over these general orders, training manuals. This type, like, well, why don't we just sit there and say, hey, the Bible said thou shalt not kill, guilty as charged.
But you know what? People always say you can indict a ham sandwich. But you know what?
Yeah.
Just like what he said, if you don't frame the case right, you can get a murderer off too.
Yeah.
Same difference. If you don't frame it right.
But why would he charge with tampering with evidence?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We talked about that earlier today. Everything that the state tried to go with, they never crossed the finish line. And like I said, with Carol Darch, they sit there and whatever they – I don't know what the hell. But then at some point during her testimony, they said so. And I know why they did it, because they want to protect her because she's a police officer. They had this whole scene, this whole exchange of questioning about, well, so if you don't remember, if your testimony that you said 2 years ago, 3 years ago, isn't the same as your testimony today, would that be because you have these two ischemic attacks? Yes,
like,
and I have memory problems.
He didn't act like She didn't say she sounded like she was okay when I listened to it.
Well, it sounded like to me, y'all, let me say this. It sounded like to me that Officer Carol George has what they call strokes that give you selective memory. Because if you question her about her training or any of that stuff or guns, she knows all about that. But when you start asking her, or if you ask her specific details about what happened that night, either her back was turned or she did not remember. That's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
I've never seen it. She must have told the prosecution 20 times she did not remember. But everything that the defense asked her, they led her in the questioning, and she said, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, mm-hmm. yes, sir, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. They did not ask her to specifically say anything. They just drug her and leading her in all those questions.
Yeah.
It was the only thing was required was yes or no, and all of her answers were yes, sir. That's crazy.
I'm laughing, but I'm really not humored by it.
It's sad. And listen, if you'd like to chime in today, I'm going to say, let me pause y'all for a second. First of all, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. And I'm going to tell you something that I've learned since living here in Fort Worth. A closed mouth does not get fed. And I've heard that from Ann Zeta, who's the former councilwoman for District 9. She said it on my show once, a closed mouth does not get fed. And what I'm going to say about that is we can sit here quietly and don't say nothing and pretend like, okay, we're just going to see how it's going to turn out. It's going to turn out just like we think it's going to turn out if we don't say anything. And I think we have played along and been in this chokehold long enough. This is not right. This is not headed in the right direction. And if we don't say something, it ain't going to go in the right direction. And so I don't know how else to put that. Do y'all agree with that?
That's right. That's why it's time
totally.
For us to work in the big folks.
I absolutely agree with that. I just don't know what to do. I listening and learning, and as I hear all this, it makes me sick because I see a choreographed defense of police protecting something that's just wrong, and the DA's office. It seems to me this trial is skewed from the start, being tried by folks that know the police officers. You know, if my understanding of things is correct. So I don't know. You know, what do we do? That's my question.
You know, that dynamic. That dynamic is going to be inherent to a certain degree in because it's just the way that it is, you know, like government work, you know. But here in the thing is in Tarrant County, it is it is belligerent. It is belligerent. It is dishonest on its face. And they are shamelessly advertising it, like calling people's bluff. It's outrageous.
Now let's talk about some of these witnesses before we get out of here tonight. We got about a little under an hour to go. Okay, listen. First of all, let's talk about the 911/non-emergency operator. She said she did both functions. That said, she tried to make the case about it being an open structure, but what she also did, and that would be a 61. But what she failed to say was that if she had labeled it a 56, which was the welfare call, Mr. James did identify that he had a neighbor who he felt like was in distress. Her cars were in the yard. He said that they were there. He never said danger, danger, danger. He was extremely calm in the situation. I feel like the non-emergency operator failed to ask enough questions. If she was struggling between open structure because he said the doors were open and whether or not Mr. James was saying, check on my neighbor, because first of all, when I call the non-emergency number, I don't know the technical terms to use. I expect the operator to tell me, do you think this is a welfare check or do you think this is about an open structure? If you ask me more questions, then I can tell you which one. But if you sit there and you are the decision maker and you got the blueprint in front of you and you know what all the codes are, you should tell me, okay, sir, tell me more about you know, what's going on. It's 2:30 in the morning. Your neighbor's doors are open. You say her car's in the driveway. Have you seen anybody? Did you see anybody running around? Did you see any other cars? She could have asked him more questions that could have said, okay, welfare check and not open structure. But she didn't do
that. Well, you know what? She did good. She did good. She did good for what the prosecution, you know, because she can't just sit there and babble. They will shut her down. They'll tell her, you know, you got to answer the questions that are asked. But what I do say that she did her job as a witness, as the witness, just like James did his job as the witness. But the prosecution wasn't eliciting the answers that the information that the jury needs. They aren't.
No, they
aren't eliciting.
Out of Mr. James.
So what she said to what she said today that I thought was really good was she brought out the fact that routinely. Officers call me back whenever they run into the situation. You know, if you paid attention. Yeah, she said routinely if there's an open structure call, what the officers will do if they can't make knock on the door and make contact, what they'll do is they'll go back and they can call me back, or they have the number. They can scroll down to the MDC, they call it, their little computer, and they can see who the complainant witness was. So that's what I've always said from this beginning of the thing is, why didn't they just shine their flashlight? They knew the address. They knew the neighbor called. Why didn't they shine the flashlight and see James sitting on his stoop and say, hey, sir, were you the one that called us? You know,
okay,
and get the warm and fuzzy.
You know what? Put a pin there. We want to talk about the flashlight on the gun when we take this call, 682-235. But remind me, y'all, we're going back to the flashlight on the gun that they talked about today. 682-235. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Well, evening to y'all with Leon.
Hey, Leon.
You know, the point that I want to add to the conversation is the fact that Aaron Dean strikes me as one of those types of people who watched a little too much. What was the name of that movie in the 80s? Judge Dredd or something like that, you know, gives you, a lot of people have the impression that urban areas, especially places like the Morningside District, is like, you know, are just like complete hazards, constantly on edge. They're constantly, you know, alerted, you know, like off of Metal Gear Solid, the video game where, you know, I don't know if I'm a gamer, but, you know, you alert a guard and they get the little exclamation mark above their head. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you have to look at these kinds of things with nuance, you know, and unfortunately, a lot of the general public and a lot of police officers think that Morningside is Fallujah.
Oh, yeah.
So they're constantly, oh no, there might be, you know, there might be a sniper right around the corner at any moment, because they were approaching it like it was a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets me. You're approaching East Allen like it's Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Fort Worth. This ain't even one of the most notorious cities in America. This ain't St. Louis. This ain't Chicago. This ain't, you know, Minneapolis. This is Fort Worth. There's no need
mm-hmm.
for all the on edge, all the, you know, chill, nuance. Yeah, all of what y'all have been mentioning. They could have done so many different steps. They could have talked to the caller. I keep forgetting sir's name, and I apologize for that. Or, you know, they could have, you know, like, there's two officers. Okay, it might have been a burglar that could have gotten away. Okay, well, generally, houses have at most three doors. One officer stands to the side
mm-hmm.
to see what's going on in the back, and one knocks on the front door. Fort Worth police, is everything okay in here? Could have been as simple as that. There's no
exactly.
need to be on edge. There's no need to be approaching the lead situation.
Well, Leon,
yes,
let me piggyback off of that, and I want you to help me with this. Okay, today, if y'all were paying very close attention to the testimony, they talked about the flashlight that belonged to Aaron Dean that was a part of the attachment to a gun, to his gun, and it was one that he bought himself, and it's a flashlight that goes on the gun. That's it.
Yes.
Pay attention, y'all. It's the small details you got to catch in this trial. Okay, so they said that night they gave Aaron Dean the flashlight back because it was not department issued. that it was something that he bought himself. That said, let's go back to the shooting. Remember, it was a flashlight in the window before he shot at Tatiana Jefferson. Okay, they made a big issue of the fact that it took a lot to get this gun unholstered and all of that. So if the flashlight from the gun was already in the window, he came in the backyard with the gun already out. Think about that, y'all.
Yeah.
Think about that, y'all.
And he was skulking, around in the backyard with the flashlight that, you know, yeah, I mean, I figure it's probably, sorry.
Go ahead. I'm just saying, rub the gun.
Flashlight, you know, I remember seeing that. I'm just like, cops are allowed, cops cannot be allowed, I mean, right, to modify their department-issued guns like that? And then you're in the, you know, and, you know, what was Mrs. Jefferson supposed to think? There's a dude with a flashlight in her backyard skulking around who has not announced himself as a cop. Come on. Common sense dictates that most people are going to think that's a burglar, especially if your backyard is dark, unlit, which most people's backyards are not lit up at night unless they have a motion light. And it's like, yeah, she couldn't have seen, especially given that she was in a lit up house looking outside. You know, if it's nighttime and you're in a lit room looking out of a window, you're not going to be able to see very well outdoors.
Let me piggyback off that then. Let's talk about that. Remember when they asked Darce about the window? She tried to tell him she didn't remember the window, and the window is just as you enter the backyard. The window's right there. The window is right. You can see it over the fence, over the 6-foot fence. You can see the window. And they were very clear to ask her several times, did you see the window? And she said, no. Well, the window was right there as they came in the backyard. Well, remember, after they came in the backyard, stuff went very quickly after that. So he came in the backyard with that gun out, flashed that flashlight on the gun, or the gun with the flashlight on it to the window. She comes to the window, and he immediately starts to shout command. And before she could process what he said, he shot her.
Ah. Yeah. It was less than a second. No human is that reflexive.
Oh, wow.
No, that's what I was saying. But I want to get into about the flashlight, okay? And this is another thing about why the case is tainted. And I'm sorry, but I'm just like, it's just like the Fort Worth Police Department and the DA, they don't know what to do about the incompetence and the freaking, this what we're talking about, the systemic problems. So they're willing to just let justice fly off, go over the cliff, you know. But so the thing that I want to point out is about the flashlight. They're taking it back to the, and you said it right there. Listen, I don't know anybody who's ever committed a crime, okay, whether it be a crime or if you are investigating, if you're collecting evidence for a murder or a shooting or an officer-related. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why did they take the flashlight off of the dent? How do they ever, if you get pulled over for drinking and driving, if you've got any kind of implement that when they collect evidence, it don't matter what you own or what you whatever, they're going to take it and they're going to stock it up, and you don't get it back until you fight with them to get it back and you're declared innocent. Why are you going to take that flashlight? Is critical because that's part of what the jury needs to see it with the flashlight on it.
Mm.
So they can understand the dimension of the case.
That part. Okay, I'm sorry.
They don't want evidence room.
That's the dimension of the case. The flashlight that binded, the flashlight that Tatiana, that made
that's
saucers
it.
Out of Tatiana's eyes, man. That's the dimension
that
of the case. You've got tampered evidence. The other aspect of that is, too, that's freaking outrageous, is the cameras, the body cameras. They said that we heard this issue with Darce's camera. Oh, she didn't have it on, so we don't have a video. But now we've got this version of video from Aaron Dean. We don't know. We don't have any way, because there's a rules of evidence thing that the original, whenever the police, and this is a Fort Worth Police Department. It's a big city police department. They should be professional. They got crime scene labs. They've got their own attorneys and everything. They're all professional. You got Neil. Anyway, there's a standard procedure here. That camera was evidence. It's, I mean, if it was involved in a kill, if it was something petty, like, oh, a DUI or this, that, whatever, or a little bit of a tussle, fine. But no, that camera, and all of a sudden what they say is when they brought Aaron Dean take those pictures of him with his pistol belt and everything, mm-hmm. they didn't collect the camera. They didn't dock the camera. The camera actually went to his lieutenant, his actual lieutenant, his or something oh, wow. like that. And so the after that point, the whole camera and the integrity, the chain of custody of that evidence is off in the wind. And now we've learned that the camera can't even be found because of whatever stupid they came up with. But listen,
they said it went back to Axon because it was an older okay. camera. Shouldn't it have been in the evidence room?
Listen, okay. So give them that excuse with the actual camera and whatever components of the camera are. But here's what you need to understand, and what people don't understand, and this is why we're getting juked, is that body camera, okay? Just like if you listen to what they were talking about today about this instrument that they used to the crime scene investigators. They were talking about the cameras and the scanners that they use, and they talked mm-hmm. about the technicality of this card and that card. You heard the defense mm-hmm. getting into the technicality. Listen, whenever a body camera, a police body cam, just like your digital cameras, you know what they have? They have a SIM mm-hmm. card, the SD card, right?
Mm-hmm.
The SD card. So in this mm-hmm. case, if the camera, whatever you got to do administratively with the camera, that's fine. But that night, that SD card should have been taken out and preserved. It should have been docked and retrieved. It's, you know, however they do it. But that SD card should have been extracted from that body camera, and it should have been bagged as evidence as the original formatted video file. That little bitty chip. Okay? And they didn't do that.
That's a bad sign right there. That should be standard procedure.
To cover it up.
You wow. have to have the original file. So now we don't know. So now what we have, if I'm a juror and I got, this is what the defense is going to do. The defense is going to come out and say, well, we don't know that video is complete. We don't mm-hmm. know if that's a true version of the whole story. Perhaps there were videos on there that showed the gun pointing at Aaron Dean. They can make any story up that they want, and the state can do it now because they don't have the original version of that video. They have the edited, they have whatever came up from evidence.com docking. But if the state had that, that's why you've seen we got this clip or that clip. But that whole SD card would have held, like, his whole shift's information on there. So you would have been able to get whenever he got out of his camera, what they said by the policy is as soon as you get out of your car to respond to a call, that camera's supposed to come on automatically. So why don't we have any footage of them walking up to the mistaken house? Right?
Because they tampered with
that. I'm telling you the truth.
And remember asked Carol Dorch, they asked Carol Dorch, did you have the dash cam video on? And she goes, oh, no, we don't turn the dash cam on every call. I mean, y'all, listen, one thing that we know for sure is they're putting Fort Worth PD on trial for being totally incompetent. It's just what it is. I mean, so does Fort Worth PD want to fix up and tell us what really happened?
Dishonest.
Or do they want to get found? But
I think the irony to come here comes over.
But does Fort Worth PD want to be found?
Obviously, even the DA don't even know what they're doing.
But does Fort Worth PD want to be found guilty of dishonesty and total incompetence, or do they want to let Aaron Dean get found guilty of murder? Because that's what's on trial here this week.
They don't care because it's been so long that they haven't seen the consequences. They don't see the consequences. They're totally complacent. They don't they think that they can change a police chief every 3 years and, oh, it's okay. Bullshit.
Well, I mean, if, you know, I can kind of personally speak to the incompetence of the Fort Worth PD because I got jumped in April of 19. It was on the news and everything, and they knew exact and the, like the guy's ID was attached to his OfferUp account. The whole thing, they didn't even try to find him. I mean, it's just like, you know, freaking.
Well,
they,
you know,
like exactly like I know who he is. The evidence is right there. They never did anything. I mean, it's like, some things are okay, but they can't find their way out of a wet paper bag sometimes.
Did Aaron Dean jump you?
No, it was not Aaron Dean.
I could. Go ahead, Jeff.
I could tell a few stories along those lines as well. I had a property on Hemp Hill Street for years, and by the way, I concur with what the statement earlier concerning Aaron Dean's mindset. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't go to a deal like this and not just shine spotlights to if they're given the nature of the call. But I know when I would make police calls, I got to where I finally said I'm just not going to call anymore because I got to where I worried. Now, let me say this. Most of the officers I dealt with were fine, but some of them were absolute thugs. And I was there for many years. I was there. I bought the property in 96. I sold it in 2016. So it's 20 years worth. And there was times where I would lay down on the floor because I was worried about some of these yahoos shooting up into the place without even knowing what was going on. So it got to where I worried more about the police than I did the criminals. And then on the incompetence, I could tell some stories there where just unbelievably presumptuous and just stupid, really just stupid stuff. And the communications.
I want to go back. This is my last comment of the night, and I'll let it play out. But I want to go. I just want to say this. Go back to the beginning of the show tonight, and we were talking. What you were saying. I want to put it out there because there's PP and PP. There's professional police and then there's police piracy.
Yeah.
And that's the distinction that we have to make. And, you know, it's like, I mean, here we are. We heard Mr. Martin Luther King say it, you know, I don't judge people by the color of their skin. I judge them by the content of their character. That's something that I would just sit there and say that because, I mean, at a certain point, we got to have police, but, you know, we don't need a million police. We don't need the police department to be the one-third of our city's budget, right? We have to learn.
Right.
The police need to help the community learn how to police as a community, and that means not having derelict dummies like Dean. You just can't hire people like that. They've got to understand that there's something about the thing that I always say is you can't have somebody who can't follow the law enforcing and mandating the law on everybody else. That's all I got to say. You can't have that.
I'm agreeing with you on that. Let me say this. Manuel Mata got arrested for cop watching. And they took his phone, and I don't think he still got it. He doesn't have it back. But Aaron Dean, you gave him an attachment to a gun he used in a murder the night that it happened. Make that make sense. And then you took the body cam that you said he had on, and you gave it back
perfect
to Axon because you said it was old. But it shouldn't have never been allowed to leave evidence because the trial hadn't taken place. So, I'm just trying to figure out what – Chief Noakes, you're making a case that we need a civilian review board. That's what you're making the case for. If y'all want to go
it's
down that
the,
rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's part
needed.
Of the fix because, like I – yeah, it's part of the fix.
It's needed.
Like I said, what I was saying about the SD card, you and me, it works the same way for you and me as it does for the police, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what they've got here is they've got the jury sitting there saying – and like I said, what's going to happen now when the defense comes up, because they're going to come in like Mike Tyson taking every punch they can to knock it down, and they're going to say, well, you know, they're going to get the this camera was programmed to come on and start recording the moment he got out of his car. So we know that there's additional footage out there, but why don't we have this footage? It's because they're going to prove that that's an edited version, an abbreviated, here we are talking about an abbreviated version of the body cam, but they're not going to be able to retrieve everything else because they don't have the body cam, and they want to say that they don't have the SD card. That SD card would have been the original format file. Everything else that comes after that, it probably changed formats 3 times. So there's chain of custody.
What we're not going to do is believe that everything just happened to fall the wrong way that night, but when it fell the wrong way, it just happens to work out in the favor of Aaron Dean. So I don't want them to think that we're that stupid. We're a fairly intelligent group of people here in Fort Worth, and I think most people know that something's not right. And so when you say things like the gun got moved, well, Aaron moved the gun. Y'all said he moved the gun at one point, so either he tampered with the evidence or the gun was never in her hand at the window, which is probably more of the truth. The gun was never in Tatiana Jefferson's hand, and you're trying to make Zion Carr say that it was, and when he had a total, like, freeze up where his brain just shut down on him and he couldn't remember anything the other day, you all are still going to try to make him say he said it. That's ridiculous.
Right.
I don't believe
it's totally ridiculous, and the people need to be called into question who made these decisions about sending this camera. That's insane. I mean, it may be old, but my phone's old. It works. You know, who's making these decisions?
Evidence that night, though. It shouldn't have never been out of evidence because the trial hadn't taken place. So why would the camera that Aaron Dean had on that night not have been secured in evidence when you took his gun? So literally, that dog don't hunt. And y'all can try to say you're going to give mystery on that one, and it's just not going to hunt. It's just going to make it look like either this police department is totally incompetent and somebody else needs to come in here and run it, or somebody's lying. And I think the latter. Somebody's lying. You don't get 80% of the budget, but you don't know what to do with it. I mean, either the city of Fort Worth is incompetent. Why would you give these people 80% of the budget and they can't hire competent officers? They can't hire competent crime scene people? They can't hire competent investigators? Something's wrong.
Remember, DNA, when there's evidence taken, they're taken and it's put elsewhere. We don't know where it's at. Remember, they don't know. Not all evidence stays in Fort Worth, according to them.
But you can't tell us you're hiring Barney Fife. You cannot tell us you're hiring Barney Fife, but you want to give him $65,000 a year, and then he gets out there and he can't perform. That's not fair.
That's not fair. That's why they need to be. That's why it's time for them their little ship start to sink.
Tatiana's family, if I don't know what, you know, I've heard this little thing and that little thing that it's kind of rocky about getting the team together to do it. But you know what? This could be a $500 million settlement. And I think $200 million is perfect. If it goes to trial, it could be $500 million.
I
would get behind
it. We got about 30 minutes. So let's talk about the witnesses. Okay, first of all, let's talk about Zion Carr. Zion Carr was a Tatiana Jefferson's nephew. The little young man got up there and really made us proud. He really did. I mean, he held his own. Mm-hmm. He was trying to be strong. You know, the first half of the testimony, I don't know what happened when they took that first break, but he had been really strong. And then it just seemed like when they started drilling him about that video game and tried to make a Tatiana Jefferson out to be playing real Royale because she liked to chase or shootouts with the bad guys, I think everything just kind of took a nosedive after that. And when the young man came back from, in my opinion, he just froze. His mind just melted, and he could not do it anymore. I think the frustration of it, he was tired, mm-hmm. and it was just too much. It just been 3 years build up, and then they put him on first, and I think it was just too much. But y'all, did y'all see that way too?
I didn't have any problem. I think that Zion was perfectly. I think that Zion was perfectly prepared, and he was everything that he needed. The only problem that I would have with Zion mm-hmm. is, like you said, the irrelevancy. It shouldn't have been the first thing. But mm-hmm. again, you have the same problem of what is being elicited from him. Okay, yeah. You got a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but. Mm-hmm. The only people that elicited anything truly material, the material, was the cross-examination, which was right off the bat, the judge should have sat there and the prosecution should have sat there and objected, and the judge should have admonished the prosecution for them coming up with their first little setup with, oh, are you the kind of little boy that tells the truth?
Yeah.
Oh, hell no. That's the same thing they did to James. And the prosecution just let... The prosecution just let the defense come at him with daggers. And it disgusts me.
I agree. And does anybody else want to talk about Zion before we move on? Okay.
Yeah,
moving
just
on
the side note about – oh, sorry.
What? No, go ahead, Leon.
Just the side note, I mean, Zion was very strong, and he's obviously very intelligent. I mean, I hope he stays on the path that he's on because, you know, his favorite subject is math. I mean, goodness me, even me with math, man, you know, someone actually likes math and wants to be a scientist. So he's, you know, I just thought, you know, he's definitely, you know, turned out to be a good person, and you know, that's probably why they were so desperate to impugn his character, and even go after the video games themselves.
And him just like
James and Zion, those are the two witnesses that I would say were the prize because they were the ones that really gave the freaking. James and Zion were the ones that gave the freaking glare back to the defense team. Like I said, Bob Gill got his and Brissett got his because those two kept punching back.
I agree. Yo, let's talk about Carol Dorch. First of all, I want to know what kind of stroke that was, what side of the brain did it happen on, and how do you have such interesting memory where you only remember what the defense needs you to remember, and everything the prosecution asks you, your answer was, I don't remember. And so I did not find her believable. Did y'all find her believable? Because I did.
I didn't either.
And okay, you didn't either? Okay. I thought it was by myself.
I would ask her if she remembers if Darren Bean was parked next to her in that parking lot when they got the call. And I ain't gonna go no further than that.
Of course. And to add to that, to piggyback off that, I believe Carol Dorch and Aaron Dean knew each other better. I think the prosecution she needled that a little bit, but she backed off. But I think it was something to that they knew each other better than they're saying that they knew each other. She would not admit to knowing him. However, something I learned, when they get those calls, if somebody needs to back up, instead of the police department assigning your backup, the officer gets to go out on that call with you. That policy needs to be changed ASAP. They should send people out to back you up who are good at with the calls that you're taking. Just don't send two rookies together. That needs to be mixed up, and that board needs to be designed to people who can back you up that are senior to a rookie. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Y'all, let's go to 469-743. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening, Carrie. Just having to walk in on this little party and everything.
We're talking about the Aaron Dean trial. Did you catch any of the trial this week?
I caught a little bit of the smoke. I caught the foreplay when they sitting up there trying to grill the young man, the child that was there. And then actually trying to imply that he's full of it. And I'm going like, did I miss something? Or you're talking to somebody who was there the only witness to the murder, and yet and still you all treating him like he was the one in the wrong. I mean, at least that's what I got out of it. But, I mean, it's like they're already trying to get, you know, they're trying to get him and trying to get Mr. James on out the way so they can just really get down to what they want to talk about. Is that what I got out of everything so far?
Mr. James ain't that one, not at all. Y'all, let's talk about that 911 non-emergency operator. She says she has both deaths, so literally she answers both calls. But we know that Mr. James Smith called in to the non-emergency number that night. What could have been done differently for a different outcome? Did y'all ever
think?
Oh, nothing.
Everything that was done according to how it was supposed to have been done. It is not their fault that you got an idiot trying to play T.J. Hooker and want to turn the thing into a turn into a damn 911 situation. He wanted some action, you know. He liked Taco Bell or police academy.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that could have been done, and I think that's the part that's always lost in the translation. There's nothing they can say or do to impeach anybody's testimony as to what happened, because the fault lies on the officer. Until they can get their head out of their asses and realize that, better off we'll all be.
But I think she could have asked Mr. James additional questions. If there was a cross between, is this welfare check or is this open structure? She definitely, in my opinion, could have said, now tell me more about your neighbor. Do you know her pretty well? You know, what's her habits? You know, is this totally out of the norm for her? I think she could have asked some additional questions to make her realize what he's saying is welfare check over the fact that the doors were open. That was not the major thing. The major thing was he was saying, go check on my neighbor and make sure she's okay. But he never said danger, 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 or I saw, you know, anybody running from the house or putting things outside the house. He never said any of that. He said both cars were in the driveway, which is something I think, you know, and then what happened, it seems like they took it from an open structure to a possible burglary in progress. How do we get there? How do you go?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm going with it. I like the way that Mr. James kind of stood his ground and didn't let them try to turn him, because he just said, hey, this is what I saw, this is what it was, I don't know what up to say.
Yeah, I agree. And, yeah, we're going to move on to the crime scene photographer. The crime scene photographer seemed pretty solid to me, but they said something, and I don't know if y'all caught it, but they said something about, in one of the photos, the pillows were one way on the couch, and then another photo, the pillows were different on the couch. So who's moving the pillows on the couch? Did y'all catch that?
Did they straighten out some dishes that might have been hung sideways? Did they make sure some dishes weren't in the sink?
We're just talking about the pillows on the couch now. They made a big issue of the pillow in one photo was one way and the pillow was a different way. So again, as Attorney Leon Reed said earlier, they were the prosecution was a stickler on details. They caught details other people were not catching or didn't attempt to catch, we don't know, whichever one it was. But they made an issue of the pillows. So the question is, who moved pillows?
Well, that's what's known as suspect.
Nobody was there with the police.
The phantom burglar.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah, like
oh,
I said, that's subterfuge because the picture they're painting is that Dean was trying to be a hero that was trying to go out and save the day, and some way, somehow, they're going to hang this on Tatiana Jefferson for her getting shot.
Or maybe his partner moved this mood pillow.
Dorothy,
maybe she moved them.
Yeah.
Dorch,
maybe she moved
them.
Who knows? Maybe she was
like
mentioned
by
the sergeant.
You know what?
Right. Maybe Officer Cotton. Maybe Officer Hoffman.
I'm going to tell you what I wanted to say. Rather than tell me who moved the pillows, tell me who moved the gun. That's what I wanted to say. I was just raising my hand going, listen, let's forget the pillows. Let's talk about how the gun got from the window to in front of the door on top of a bar.
We already know.
And the sergeant was giving them commands on what to do and how to clean up the crime scene.
I'm just saying, y'all, pay attention. That was like where you should be. We're talking about a pillow on a couch versus who moved the gun. That's a prosecution. FYI, I hope you hear this tape. Tell us why you didn't emphasize who moved the gun. Why did the prosecution miss the opportunity to say there was no gun near Tatiana Jefferson, that the gun was found near the door? So was the gun ever at the window, as you all tried to make Zion say it was, or was the gun never at the window? Was the gun near the door? I'm just saying, y'all.
Sherry,
something to think about.
Sherry.
Uh-huh.
Sherry, this is crazy.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the things that I'm sitting there saying. Like, in any situation, why didn't they have a 3D? Why didn't they have, you know, they have these crime scene investigators. They had him talking about how all this equipment and how he took this picture with this and what that scanner does. The reason that what they were talking about, that whole equipment with that scanner, that video is taking a laser measurement of the dimensions of the room when it does the panoramic room. He was taking its panoramic. That means he pans the whole room, and that laser is measuring the corner, everything. So what it does is it does like an interior design model of that room. The reason they do that is for the prosecution to develop one of those visual aids for the jury to see, okay, you got a 10 by 12, a three-dimensional representation of the room. Remember, you've seen this before in trials where they'll have like the virtual reality kind of scenario, right? And you'll have the victim here, the body laying
like
here,
a 3D,
the bed
3D
here.
Model.
A 3D
it's
model,
like
3D. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they closed the freaking – the prosecution had all of these has put all of this up there, but they didn't do nothing. They didn't show none of it. We didn't see none of that.
They may
so
not
we don't,
they,
so
they
what we're sitting here
right
saying,
away.
Where was the gun? If okay, so if we would have had that 3D model that digital guy that they spent all this time with his dumbass testimony about SIM cards and zip cards, and but then they didn't even produce none of that. The state didn't come with none of that. They had all of the evidence to sit there and sit there and say, okay, so the gun would have been located here, which would have been 6 feet or 8 feet from the body, right? So we know if it was technically, if she had a gun and she got shot, it probably would have fell within 2 to 3 feet of her, right? It wouldn't have flopped over and fell on a box. Come on.
Okay,
we need the evidence.
This just came to my mind. Do y'all realize how they're rushing his trial before Sharon Wilson leaves office?
Right? And
listen,
so that the
Madam
judge will vacation. Yep.
Right.
And so,
if Sharon Wilson leaves office, they want him to get found innocent before they want him to get off.
This is like this will be like strike 10 for Sharon Wilson on convictions against police. She hasn't. No cop has ever been convicted of a crime under her watch.
Wow.
No cop. The only exception would be John Romer. But in the case of John Romer, they had to assign a district attorney pro tem because Sharon Wilson had to recuse herself because her office already got caught trying to freaking collude to get him off with the official oppression charge. It's sick. It's disgusting. I can't believe that people don't get it.
Oh, I agree. Listen, we're going to move on quickly, y'all, because we got a little time to get out of here. Okay, medical examiner. What did y'all think of his testimony? I thought he was pretty solid until they caught him on a couple of inches at the back where he didn't mention this, you know, some kind of way it was on the left or the right or whatever. But,
yeah.
Dude, I'm like, you know, they trying to make it now that a Tatiana Jefferson was bending down. at the time that the shot was taken. That's why the shot, they're saying, was angling down. Well, my thing is this. If, according to the crime scene photos, if they be true, those blinds were partially open. Remember? They were halfway up. So if she was bending down, was she bending down to see what was going on in the bottom part of the window that didn't have any blinds on it? But either way, whether she was standing straight up or she was bending down, Aaron Dinkfield took a shot and shot her. So he had the flashlight on his gun, which showed her who she was, but she could not see who he was. So did his testimony change anything? I don't think it did.
I don't think it had a big impact on the jury, but what it goes to is the same thing that Attorney Reed was saying earlier. It's just the same thing in every single case that we've seen with every piece of evidence and every witness that the state brought. We see the same thing that Mr. Reed was saying earlier, that you have Mike Tyson knocking the heck out of the opponent because they were able to come in and they got everything that they wanted out of that witness. They crossed the finish line with that witness examination. They did. They got some conclusive elements established in the jury's mind. But everything that the prosecution tried to do with the witnesses, it fell short and flat on its face.
Let me say something about the medical examiner's testimony that stood out to me today. The fact that he said that the shot was so deadly that it hit her in the heart, it messed up her liver, and it messed up her kidney. But I don't think that anybody can determine whether somebody would have died or not had they made it to the hospital. And I thought he should have said, I don't know. Because what I know about science, y'all, science is subject to change. A doctor can only tell you what he knows based on his cases that he's had. But there's always exceptions to every rule. So there's no reason that we should believe that a Tatiana would not have made it had she got proper medical attention. So I think they tried to draw that conclusion for us today that a Tatiana wouldn't have survived anyway based on her injuries. But no one can say that. Y'all agree with that? Nobody can say that.
No.
You're on it too. Like you're on the same like torque with me, because I just thought about that. You just brought that alive because, what the prosecution, if they have been strategizing this thing, if they want to put a little bit of demon on Dean, then they would have had that witness coach. They would have said, this is our approach. What we need you to do is to make sure that you say that, look, then they could have got into this and they could have asked him. The prosecution could have came in back in on the redirect, and they could have said, well, I understand that what you said was that this was a automatic lethal, but does that rule out the fact that had we got early intervention with first aid, if Aaron Dean would have sat down there instead of worrying about toying around with the laser on a gun, if Aaron Dean would have went in there and did some CPR and put all of this combat medical aid, the right kind of first aid that she needed, are you also able to rule out that would have been, and like I said, the prosecution has to help. And the defense came in and they basically, the prosecution gave it up for the defense, man. It's disgusting.
You know what's amazing,
it's
y'all? Listen. Two things that come to mind. First of all, Aaron allegedly turned the laser, the green laser off the gun that nobody saw. Period. Okay, so make that make sense. He didn't testify to that, but I think Dart said something about a green laser, and someone said Aaron Dean turned the laser off the gun. So, again, nobody's seen the gun. But Darcy didn't even see the gun, but she tells us that he turned the laser off the gun. Y'all remember that part?
Right.
Please tell me somebody remembers. Okay, right. Okay. So, and then at some point they mentioned that Aaron Dean moved the gun. but they never said he moved where he moved the gun to. That part. Right. So, in my opinion, Erin Dean could have moved the gun out of her purse, as far as I'm concerned. So, when you say he moved the gun, where did he move the gun to? So, it's just too many holes in this these stories where we're not getting from A to Z what happened. It's just like a jigsaw puzzle that's like all over the page. But another thing, you got to remember, they carry on them. Huh?
I guess it's safe to say they don't have no body cam footage to show what did they do after he shot her and he went back in to administer first aid. That I think that's something significant they should have had.
Yeah.
Well, we covered that. The body cam they claim is now went back to Exxon because it was old, and they no longer know where it's at. So I don't even know how he got out of evidence that night. So that's like a whole thing we just got to cover a few minutes ago.
Sound like a reoccurring story. Fort Worth always misplacing evidence, are they? They always misplacing something.
Right. So y'all, and another thing, in that little kit that they carry, that little first aid kit, I was told that there's some tape in there that they can put on bullet wounds. So let's go back to the fact that Erin Dean did not render aid to Tatiana Jefferson. Why didn't he go in his bag and take that tape out? Because this was only one shot, because the bullet lodged in her back. So it was only the entry point. So why didn't he tape up the hole until the paramedics got there?
That right.
part.
He's
too busy trying to cover up his what he did.
Pay attention, y'all. So right, and so when they kept trying to make the point today that you know, she would have died anyway from her injuries, what they were trying to do was make you feel that don't feel bad that Erin Dean didn't render her any aid because she would have died anyway. I think that's a conclusion nobody can draw but God.
Exactly.
So I don't receive that. Let's just say that. So that's just something
The number one text when a police officer does that, as you all saw in the case when the black man got killed in Wolf City, Texas. What did they do? After they shot him, they put the handcuffs on him to pull his arms back so that it worsens the damage and it started increasing the bleeding. So he bled to death in less than like 2-3 minutes. He was dead. They know exactly what to do because they have that little charcoal powder that they can pour on the wound to stop the bleeding. They supposed to have that in any kit, but they don't seem to have these things when they need them. But they always in someone else's car.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that 100%. Let's talk about James Smith's testimony. James Smith was very compelling. I think they tried to tear down two things on his testimony. They tried to make an issue of if you were over there and why didn't you say something instead of, you know, calling the police, why didn't you just go to the doors and say something, scream out her name? And then the other thing I thought they tried to make a point of he said something about some sound he heard. Mr. James said, I didn't hear that sound. I never told y'all I heard that sound. So does anybody remember that part of the testimony?
Yeah, they said something about a battering ram, and he knocked that out of the park on him. Like I said, Zion and James, they both didn't. They were the best. They were the whenever the defense came against them, and they didn't get no help from the prosecution. Man, that was like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
That part. They absolutely did. They absolutely did. And y'all, listen. We only got less than a minute left on. If you're listening via the internet, so you would have to jump on the phone lines now if you want to hear the rest of the show. That would be calling in at 515-605-9321 before the clock hits 9:30. Otherwise, you won't be able to hear the rest of the show. Okay, listen, y'all. The thing is this: Ashley Carr, the sister of Tatiana Jefferson, was very convincing. I loved her testimony when she talked about her sister, when she talked about her nephews, when she was talking, you know, and singing, you know, the family vacation that they went on. She addressed her brother at some point, but they only show one picture of a Tatiana Jefferson, one picture of a Tatiana Jefferson. So they never humanized her. And the judge, when the prosecution first began to tell you about a Tatiana Jefferson, and it was really starting to feel like you were getting to know her as a person, the judge, Judge Gallagher, said, move on, in a very ugly tone. So in my opinion, he did not want us to know who Tatiana Jefferson. Yeah, he did. He did not want us to know who Tatiana Jefferson was. And then after about 5 or 10 minutes of testimony, they ended for the day, and the defense never did a cross-examination. They said, we don't have any questions. So now we have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the jurors to forget about what Ashley said about Tatiana. I think that was very strategic, and I think they do not want to humanize her. And also, why did the prosecution not put a picture of Tatiana up there, like I said earlier, so that everybody can see who the victim was? So do y'all see how that went? Y'all paying attention? Some real game plan was going on in court today, or period.
That's basic defense strategy for a police officer. It's always to demonize the victim and make the officer the victim. That's what they're doing.
But we can't even have a picture of her up there like they do in most courtrooms of the victim, picture of the evil.
That's going to remind the world of how tragic the incident was if you do that. No, they don't want to do that.
When they rested their case today, so the DA is taking off tomorrow and the defense? Everybody taking off?
And they're not going to have any court. They're not going to have any court Thursday or Friday. So they're not coming back until Monday.
And listen, the other thing, too, about the whole Tatiana care, the personal, the humanizing her, or the celebration of a person's life. The prosecution and the defense, both before the trial started, I think it might have right when it was getting hyped up. Guess what? We got all this fucking drama going. I'm sorry about my language.
Okay.
We got all this hype going on about what James Smith is doing by holding the sign up. This is the thing. Everybody's all talking about, we demand justice for Tatiana. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That message doesn't have anything inflammatory about it. The protest, and they're like, Fort Worth is so, they have no clue, man. They have no clue about what a rally is. Because everybody in Fort Worth, whatever, racial, this, that, whatever, they just want the right thing. That's it. And the messaging James is coming out there, James ain't trying to say lynch this Mo. Ain't trying to say lynch James Dean. Or you better kill him. We ain't hearing none of this damn fry the bacon BS. What we're hearing in Fort Worth is, hey, if we don't get justice, we're going to shut it down. And that's legit. That's what we need to. That's what needs to happen.
Let me ask you, because you're making a very good point. But they charged him with murder. Where do we go if they don't find him guilty of murder?
The thing is you got to understand what the prosecution. You got to understand the technical aspects of the law. If the prosecution don't set this up, they could get him for a lesser included offense. They could get him for deadly conduct. They could get him for criminal trespassing. They could get him for criminally negligent manslaughter. And you know what? Wow. The bottom line of it is that they missed their big opportunity, because they could have put Carol. If the prosecution was caring about getting this case gone, getting this case handled, they would have indicted Carol Darch too as an accessory. I'm just saying. I'm not saying that she deserves to be on the same level, this, that, whatever. But what you want to do is you want to put that vice on somebody. You want to put that heat on somebody so they're in the hot seat. And then she would have been thinking twice. They could have turned her on Dean. This is what they do in real criminal trials about criminals who ain't cops. They got their shit together when you ain't a cop.
The only thing that Darch was, in my opinion, I can say I don't hate her, is that she did say, I didn't see him I did not hear him say gun, neither
right.
before or after the shooting. So she was honest enough to say, I'm not going to put it that I saw the gun or I heard him say gun. So she is not going to go on the record for saying that part, which to me, it all but says that Tatiana Jefferson did not have a gun. If you can't even get your own officer, you know, who was your backup to say she had a gun, more than likely she didn't have a gun, that part.
I know.
She had every right. I'm sorry?
Yeah. I'm not being sexist or nothing, okay? But I'm just gonna admit it in many ways. Women are smarter than men, and women, mm-hmm. when they decide to be, when they got that stripe to be a liar, mm-hmm. hey, they can lie way better than a man can. So right. that's all I gotta say.
Oh, and you just came to the conclusion how long ago?
I'm just joking, man. I'm kind of joking, but I'm just saying that Darch is dumb, mm-hmm. you know, in one way, but, you know, she's dumb because she's dishonest, is what I'm saying.
It's not that Darch is being dishonest. Dorch is just trying not to get herself into the same fire that Aaron Dean is in.
Exactly.
Dorch was just observing what's going on. Dean was just trying to show her out, like, hey, let me show you how this is done. Like this is how you handle a burglary call. Because it got turned over and it went from a welfare call to a burglary call, all based upon their lust to just change the narrative. Something must have
exactly.
been going on bad over there in this neighborhood. It can't be as simple as someone checking to see if someone's okay. That's what happened.
Yeah, because the way I interpret it is the only reason that we don't have Darch and the only reason that determines Darch and Dean who's being on trial here is the fact that who was pointing their gun left and who was pointing their gun right. Because, and they shouldn't, neither one of them should have had their guns drawn when they went through that gate. There was no reason to freaking be having your gun drawn you didn't have no reason.
Let me clean that one up a little bit. Them having their guns out in the backyard of someone's house at 3 a.m, I can go with that. You're not supposed to have your finger in the trigger well unless you have every intent to shoot. That's where the training goes bad. You know,
right.
If I'm going to cock my gun out, I'm already going to be deemed as someone that's in defense position. But you're supposed to have your finger on the trigger well, I mean on the trigger guard as you're walking. Because you could trip on a tree branch or something and could jerk the trigger and it goes off. So you're supposed to have your finger on the guard, not in the well. It don't take but 1/10 of a second to go from the trigger guard to the trigger well and pull the trigger.
Well,
right.
Let's talk about Carol Dorch. Carol Dorch tripped over the weed eater. So literally, it could have been like a situation right then with those guns.
Right.
And if y'all listen, if you've never been to that location, there is no third door. Doors, the door off the kitchen, off which is up near the carport or under the carport, and the front door both face Allen Street. So all they had to do was stand in front on Allen Street and observe one at one door, one at the other door, and just look in for a minute and listen. So what was
like
the rush to get
order,
to that door?
Exactly.
That's what the general order states. That's the point.
Or shine a spotlight. Just shine a spotlight, you know, and that gets people's attention. So,
or say police.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, Carrie, are you trying to be a police officer?
I mean, I would have thought that would have been the easiest thing to do. Just say police. There was a whole lot made of general order today. Where were they going with that? A whole lot was made about general order.
That's to be continued, because somebody has yet to even mention the fact that what was so wrong with the thought of, why did you go in the backyard when there's a front door and the door was open and the lights are on? What was the danger involved in that? I'd rather go through that door with those lights on than go around a backyard where anything could have been back there. A pit bull could have got you from there.
Yeah.
You know, so you didn't even know there was a dog back there. You didn't know there was a security camera back there that could have alerted somebody. You could have set the alarm off. You don't know what you do when you go back into someone's backyard.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of questions about general orders today.
I mean, shoot, it could have been a bear trap back there. Some people know to put traps back there in their yard. Wouldn't that be some funny?
I agree. But my point is, they specifically kept talking about general orders today, as though they were going somewhere. They were leading us somewhere about the general orders. But they were very clear to say how often somebody else detoured from their general orders, how they failed to sign in when they were a crime scene investigator on the crime scene log, or how somebody failed to, you know, document something properly. So I think they were trying to humanize Aaron Dean, that he may have not followed general orders, but a lot of other people don't follow general orders either. Did y'all get that may have been where they were going with that?
Right. The thing that I would say about the general orders, I go back to the thing that I say about the general orders every single time. Load up a file of the general orders on your computer and do a keyword search murder. What the hell does general orders have to do with the commission of the crime of murder? General orders are not relevant to criminal, are very minimally, they're relevant to the facts in the case. They are not relevant as matters of law, criminal law. That's all I got to say. So the focus on the general orders and the prosecution allowing the defense to talk about general orders, that shit is an aside, and that's where this case is going to fail.
Yo, you know what? Let me do something tonight. Go ahead, Reggie.
No, I was just going to say, what you might notice too is that I bet you no one has pulled up any statistics as to how many burglary calls has police officers violated policies and procedures. I think those are some of the salient facts that should be brought up. How often have these things ended up tragically? How often has a police officer been reprimanded for these type of things? These are the type of things that I'm waiting for to hear the prosecution say. Now, the prosecution is supposed to be bringing out facts that incriminate the officer, not defend the officer. But
that's what I was,
like I said, you got a police officer that both has the prosecution and defense working for him, whereas Tatiana Justice is going to have nobody. She's going to be left out in the cold. Let's not forget the media. The media is probably the only one that's halfway saying or doing anything, but that's only on cue.
Y'all, let's talk about the makeup of this panel tonight. You know, we had two Leons, Reggie and Carrie. We're all African American. Jeff and Christopher, Caucasian. Tara, interracial. So why doesn't the jury look more like that? Just think about that. I'm just saying.
Get rid of the undesirables.
But let me finish. So all of us are registered voters, I believe. Okay. So just think about how that jury pool is mixed up, and even though we're a basket here of all types of things, all types of races, but at the same time, we all pretty much feel like something's not right here, and that this man should be held responsible for the death of a Tatiana Jefferson. Will we all agree on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay.
Definitely. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So that's it. Now it's going to be funny when we see how the jury comes out. Just pay attention. And the people that are on this phone, I did not pick them for that reason. And but I thought about it after we were all on the phone that we
Carrie,
have white,
one quick question.
Black, and we have interracial.
Carrie?
And so I think that's closer to the makeup of Fort Worth than and Tarrant County than what this jury pool is. I'm just saying, y'all, something ain't adding up. Something ain't adding up. Jury of his peers, whatever you want to call it, something's not adding up. And y'all, let's take the last thing of the night before they cut me off because I'm going over tonight. Let's talk about the prosecution resting. Was just 3 days into the trial. Basically, so many more things that could have been said. The fact that they never humanized a Tatiana Jefferson. They don't have an image of a Tatiana Jefferson, so we see who the victim was. We wanted to know more about who a Tatiana Jefferson was as a person. You know, who was she? The fact that she was college educated, you know, on her way to medical school, taking care of her nephew, taking care of her mother. It just was not enough of that said in the trial. So do you think the prosecution let us down by not really giving us more in terms of telling us the fact that Aaron Dean murdered her? We didn't hear that enough. I don't think I ever heard the prosecution say one time Aaron Dean murdered Tatiana Jefferson. I never heard that. Did anybody else hear that? Because I didn't.
No.
Wow.
I didn't know they didn't say that.
That's the
I never
point
heard
that I
say. Huh?
That's the point that I make about the whole distraction with the general orders and everything, getting technical, this, that, whatever. The prosecution didn't even use the word murder yet. I mean, I don't know. They might have once or twice in their opening statements or whatever, but we haven't heard the word murder. We haven't had any kind of emphasis on the elements of murder. We've had the emphasis on what's the code 56, what's the code. All this technicality that the jury, man, these aren't dumb people, but these aren't people that are cops. Why are we trying to throw all of this minutiae in their face? The trivial matters. The matters are the elements of murder. The matters are matters ain't general orders. General orders are for cops to decide how to punish cops. It's not for people to decide how to punish a murderer.
I agree. Listen, y'all, we're gonna go down the line, and anybody got closing statements before we get out of here? Tara, we haven't heard from you in a while. Closing statement, comment. Did you lose Tara?
We may have lost. No, I'm still here.
Sure. Go ahead.
I just hope Fort Worth does the right thing by Tatiana Jefferson, because she was a really good person.
I agree. Leon Mayer. Say what?
The short time I know her, she was a very sweet person. So I hope they do the right thing by her and give her justice.
I agree. Leon Merritt.
I pretty much concur. You know, here's hoping that the right thing does happen, and he's held accountable, and we make the changes, and you know, we've we need to, regardless of the come, we need to stay civically active, pushing for improvements to the system, being civil but assertive, and making sure that things don't, you know, just kind of keep going status quo. Push for change, push for improvement all the time. It's like, just as humans, as individuals, are always needing to better ourselves, we as a society always need to work towards bettering our society as well. And I will say that if this does go the wrong way locally, you know, there's always the federal government. You need to be petitioning the DOJ to look into it.
I agree. Thank you. Reggie Ruffin, closing comment.
Well, you know, the point I was going to try to make a little earlier is that anytime the prosecution is making their opening argument, always states, we're here because so-and-so, so-and-so did this. He did these things, he did that things, and he murdered so-and-so, so-and-so. But did you hear any of that from the beginning? It sounded to me like they was tap dancing around that one. So they, Tesla got to say, the fix is in. So that should have been brought out on opening arguments, where we are, what are we doing, what are we arguing, and what is it that we're trying to establish. And I seriously doubt that happened.
Agreed. Jeff Harper, closing comment.
Carrie, first of all, so impressed with the caliber of folks on the call, and I really didn't prepare tonight. I didn't realize I was going to be considered a panelist. But there's nothing I disagree with that's been said here tonight. I think what's happened, and I wasn't that acquainted with the details of this case until following your post and then hearing tonight, I think she didn't even have a gun, and that footage that's been lost would reveal that. And, you know, who would put the gun on a box in a case like this, and all these things, they just don't add up. And it's a whole culture down at the courthouse, and I don't know how we unravel that. It's a long-term project, but somehow these things have to be taken out, and it cannot be where Atiana died in vain, or that's not the right way of putting it, but I know y'all know what I'm talking about. This cannot just go by the wayside, So I will stay tuned in and look forward to helping however I might.
Wonderful. Christopher Moreno closes out.
My closing statement is going to be quick, and I just want to put out this historical puzzle for people. If you're black, stop riding the bus, right? Mm. And if you're white, stop eating the cake. That's the little quip to black history and white history, right? Mm.
Right.
So, I mean, do your own little research about it. If you know about it, you know about it. Don't ride the bus and quit eating the cake.
Wow. Y'all, listen, that's what it is. You know, there's so, I mean, my heart is heavy today, y'all. I mean, literally, my chest is hurt all day today. And I never get chest pains like this. But I just think it was just the stress of seeing what I saw today. And I had been feeling since Monday, like, this is not heading in the right direction. And I think we really should be careful that we pay attention to all the details, not just what they're putting in front of us, what they're not saying, what they should have said, what they could have said. Because, like I said earlier, you can indict a ham sandwich. And as Jeff put it, if you don't frame it right, you can let off a murderer. And so we have not seen the prosecution frame this case right. We did not see them humanize Atiana Jefferson, and we did not, or I have not, to my recollection, heard them say Aaron Dean murdered Atiana Jefferson. Now, the question is, if Aaron Dean didn't do it, who did it? Because I'm just trying to figure, Atiana's not with us anymore. She was before they answered that call that day, but nobody wants to call Aaron Dean a murderer. But that's just what that is. He's on trial for murder. And I think those are the things that are not being said. And as Reggie just said, they're tap dancing around it. But the question is, that would make the prosecution complicit with the defense in trying to get Aaron Dean off. And that's definitely what we don't want to believe. I'm sorry?
No, I said ding, 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 ding. You got it.
Right.
You're the winner.
Right. That's not what we want to say. That's right. So that's not what we want to see. So since y'all taking Thursday off and Friday off and Saturday off and Sunday off, we're going to pray that in these next 4 days that you all get it right. Y'all get that big image of Atiana Jefferson, and you put her up there at the front by the judge and let us know who the victim was. We want to hear more about who she was, and we want to hear more about how Aaron Dean murdered Atiana Jefferson and who moved the gun to the door. Because if you said Atiana Jefferson had it at the window, who moved it to the door? Because you said Aaron Dean took the scope, took the laser scope and turned it off on the gun, but you never said Aaron Dean moved the gun to the door. So it's too many holes that are not filled, and we're hoping by the end of this case that we will see that. So, yes, listen, y'all, we'll see you Friday night as we do a recap of all the things that we missed Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Until then, y'all, good night.
Good night, everyone.